Welcome back to the Sully Scoop, where three lifelong Husker bros dive in depth on all surrounding the new era of Husker football, where our cups never run dry of the roulade under head coach Matt Rhule, made by fans for fans with J-Cell, B-Cell, and T-Cell. We are here once again on your favorite Cornhusker podcast, and I want to get B-Cell and T-Cell's take on the Cornhuskers that just got inducted to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, J-Cell, I think it was a great honor for each and every single one of these guys. I mean, you go down the list here, and each one of them was a standout at Nebraska. And you've got these guys who went on, and most of them had a career in the NFL as well. I mean, Sam Koch, Kyle Vandenbosch, Spencer Long, all three guys that had long careers in the NFL there. And you can't forget the guy who highlights this class, T-Magic.
Well, let me tell you something, B-Cell. There is three out of six. You said a lot of them went to play in the NFL. You only named three out of the six. Now, let me tell you, two, they predate my time being a Husker fan. I mean, I was not alive in whenever these guys were playing, like the 1960s, when the Huskers finally started winning some games. But I do want to say T-Magic was a stud to watch, but let me tell you, he also got his nickname T-Tragic for a reason. He had now, some J-Cell, good games, J-Cell, but he sure had some bad ones.
What are you talking about playing back in the 60s here? You got the oldest guy on the list here is David Clark from 78 and 80. Troy Dumas played back in the 90s. And then Koch
those
and
Vandenbosch
were that. Oh, come on, man. Nothing
pretty sure it's
you
Cook.
Like that.
Pretty sure it's Sam Cook. And by the way, the most deserving guy on this list is Sam Cook, because the man spent like 20 years in the NFL. He's going to be in the NFL Hall of Fame. And now he just got his son to commit as a punter to the 2024 Scurs. Cannot wait for that.
Absolutely. But I do want to say, T-Cell, I don't really care what they did after they were at Nebraska. That is not why they got inducted to the Nebraska Hall of Fame.
That's a fair point, J-Cell, but I'm just saying that Vandenbosch and Cook dominated, and they definitely deserve to get inducted. You're ripping on T-Magic, and for what? I mean, like, the guy didn't win anything here, and I get that.
And that's for what?
But at the same time, he put up the stats, he put up the numbers, and ultimately he brought us back to being relevant. But it's not his fault that the coaching
and the
other
players didn't push
it up. He's the last
quarterback that had us relevant.
That's what I'm saying. He put us there. He put us there.
I would argue that it wasn't him. It was the coaching staff behind him and the players around him. T-Magic wasn't all he could do. T-Magic, all he could do was run. Otherwise, if he tried to pass, that's where he got his name, T-Tragic, for a reason. I just want to say, let's go back and look at what happened in the Big Ten championship game. I mean, it just fell apart. The wheels fell off at the end of
the
year.
Listen, you want to go back to that Big Ten championship game, J-Cell? T-Magic had probably the
one
most
play.
Electrifying run I've ever seen.
One play there, B-Cell. That's all it was, just one play.
Well, J-Cell, then I guess you better go induct your favorite quarterback from the past as Sam Keller, because ultimately, like you just mentioned, you actually told me before we even started this podcast that you thought Sam Keller put together one of the best seasons as a Husker you'd ever seen in your life.
Actually, I said Riker Feist, so let's get that right. But actually, that is not true once and for all, T-Cell. I would rather have Joey Gans out there getting inducted. Joey Gans made us relevant and was one of the first to do it under Bo Pelini.
It wasn't Joey Gans. It was Ndamukong Suh. Don't even give Joey Gans credit. It was 100% Suh. And I agree, Gans did it all. But ultimately, you have to play more than one season to get inducted unless you're winning a national championship.
He brought us back to bowl eligibility. This was after the terrible Bill Callahan catastrophe.
But again, I'm giving 100% kudos to Ndamukong Suh, because there's just not another man that was built like him.
Well, you're right. I don't think Joey Gans was built like Ndamukong Suh, because if he was, I don't think he would have been playing quarterback.
But as we all saw this past week, Big Banter Sports posted on Twitter their Big Ten rankings, and they stuck Nebraska at number 9. And we were just talking about Sue. Nobody would dare stick Nebraska at 9 with Sue out there. But Bisa, what's going on, man? Why are the Huskers sitting at 9?
I think Big Banter and the guys there are trying to do their best, but let's be 100% real. The only reason they have Nebraska at 9 is the fact that everybody is completely disrespecting this team right now. And I know Jaysal's going to say they haven't done anything. It's a new coaching staff. It's all of this. Let me tell you something. Half of the Big Ten West is a new coaching staff right here. The fact that they have Wisconsin above Minnesota is crazy to me. Granted, Minnesota's got a whole new team. And then you've got an Iowa team who can score 7 points a game, ranked number 5. Come on. That's a joke. This Husker team is going to average 24 a game, and you heard it here first.
Yeah, B-Saw, I'm 100% with you on this one. There is no reason at all that Iowa comes in at number 5. That is actually the team that I'm actually more upset that Iowa's at 5 than Nebraska's at 9. Because I'm thinking, you and me, we ran down the list last week, and we both decided Iowa's going to have 8 losses this season. Scoopers, write it down, place your bets, do what you want. Iowa is not making a bowl game this season. They're going to be that bad, so they should not come in at number 5. And as Bezo mentioned, Wisconsin has no reason to be number 4. Wisconsin hasn't done anything. They haven't even been to a Big Ten championship recently at all, and they're always everyone's favorite pick to be there. I mean, at least Minnesota's consistently winning 8 games. I mean, Wisconsin hasn't been doing that. And let's not even talk about the disrespect for the Scurs. How about the disrespect on Purdue? These guys just won the West, and they're sticking them in there at number 10. If I was a Purdue fan, I'd be pissed off.
I can't disagree with that. Purdue definitely got the shaft there, but I don't know how the Huskers are at 9. Listen, they haven't done anything. Yes, I'm going to agree with that, but they shouldn't be 9. I would stick them in right at 7. Let me tell you, there's no reason that Maryland is number 6. First of all, they shouldn't even be number 9. I would put them below Purdue and Michigan State. And I would put Iowa. We just beat Iowa last year. We were a team that had 4 wins all season. We lost to a 1-win Northwestern team. And you're going to put this Iowa team that couldn't score on offense above us? No, that is disrespectful, and they should not be number 5. I do believe, though, the number 4 team in the conference right now that you should be jotting down is definitely not Wisconsin. I think it has to be Minnesota. They have a coach that has been there. They have a team that has been, you know, developed. They have an offensive line. Wisconsin has a new coach. So does Nebraska. Why is there such a big gap there? It's not like Wisconsin has done anything in the past few years. Purdue has a new coach, and Purdue just won the West, and now they're all of a sudden at 10. So if getting a new coach is going to drop you, even though I think it hoisted the Huskers up a little bit, how does it put Wisconsin at number 4 is all I want to know.
Well, Jay, so before you get all high and mighty with Minnesota, take it from a guy who picked Minnesota to win the West last year. Give up on that train. Sell your losses, because you're going to lose again. Minnesota hasn't done anything, and they're not going to do anything, because as B-Cell mentioned, Tanner Morgan, the guy who played there for 10 years, if he couldn't even get them out of the West, they're not getting out of the West. Trust me, their ship has already passed, and the team who should be number 4 actually should be Illinois. They need to put more respect on Illinois, because they got a coach who's proven win, and they should be number 4.
I do not want to put Minnesota as the team to win the West, but I think at this point they have to be the number 4 team in the conference.
If you're sticking them at number 4, you're picking them to win the West, Jaysal.
At this point,
it's as simple as
that.
I
don't know who else to go to. At this point, you're just, who do you put at number 4 then, T-Saw? Who
I
are
just
you
told
just
you, throwing? Illinois. Illinois, I think, is going to be the team to beat in the West. And the only team that's going to have a chance is
Nebraska. You're both wrong. You're both wrong.
Well, let me tell you something. I would have had Illinois at number 5, so I was right there with you. I think it's a coin flip, but I don't think that you can go ahead and put Wisconsin above those two. I think those two are a coin flip, and guess what? They're the only two other than Iowa, who shouldn't even be in the top 10, that have the same coach going into the season, so I think they have to be the front runners to win the West at this point.
But if the Jason, if the coach hasn't done anything and he hasn't won, what makes you think he's going to win now? Because other teams are getting better coaches than what they had before.
False.
He couldn't win. He couldn't win when all these other programs fired their crappy coaches. So what makes you think he's going to win now that the other programs like Nebraska and Wisconsin have better coaches? You know,
it's going to take a coach longer than an off season.
I doubt that. Now, I think you're going to get surprised.
Here is the other part. You guys are both focused on the fact that Wisconsin's overranked, Iowa's overranked, Minnesota probably could be 7 there. Nebraska and Illinois, I believe, are probably 5 and 6, Nebraska 5, Illinois 6. But I really don't know who this number 4 team would be.
We haven't beaten Illinois.
Bissell, don't you have the Huskers going undefeated? Shouldn't you be putting them more at like 1 or 2?
We haven't beaten Illinois.
The Huskers are going to win the West here.
How, Bissell, how are the Huskers coming in at number 6 if you have us losing one game? If we're ranked number 6 after losing one game, I'm going to lose it.
This is preseason rankings. And I think going into this season, the Huskers are ranked 5. I did not say 6. I said I would have Illinois ranked 6. But the other part that confuses me.
Which is even more baffling.
No. It's not baffling. You got to get yourself a cup of Roulade, and you would agree with me, and you would understand that this team is a lot better than everybody thinks. This is a team that was undisciplined under Frost and couldn't win close games. Matt Rhule is coming in. It's a new
focus. They just couldn't win games.
Discipline. No, they blew it at the end of the game. This team is not far off, and I would put money on it that this team is going to hit the over on their wins this year, and they are going to win the Big Ten West. And to make matters worse.
Excuse me. How many years in a row does that have you said that now?
That they are going to hit the over? I have never told you that they're going to hit the over in wins before.
Oh my. That is the biggest bull I have ever heard. Now, listen, Scoopers, I might drink the Roulade myself, but when Bissell comes out here and tells you to take the over, take the under. You always fade Bissell's picks. That's just a helping hand coming to you.
That's a lock. And if anybody else is looking for a good bet out there, take Nebraska to cover against Michigan in Lincoln right now. That line is extremely high for that September 30th game.
What are we sitting at?
They have the Huskers as an 18-point underdog against Michigan in Lincoln, and that's just not going to happen.
Bissell hasn't seen this quarterback take the field one time in Nebraska or
I haven't
Nebraska.
Seen him take the field in a Nebraska uniform, but let me tell you something. Jeff Sims,
you haven't seen
Cam Newton-esque at Georgia Tech.
That doesn't even make sense, because let me tell you, he didn't play for a national championship, and he isn't going to go on to be an MVP candidate in the NFL. Secondly, you have not seen Matt Rhule's offense here at Nebraska. You haven't seen the defense. How do you know that that is going to happen at this point in the year? I mean, the season hasn't even started, and Bissell's already calling for all this.
Well, Jay, so I'll take this one real quick for you, okay? The thing is, the benefit that Nebraska has with Matt Rhule is he just coached in the NFL for 3 years, okay? So he was going to all the combines. He was going to all the pro days. He was studying all the film on the players. No, he definitely was. You have to as a coach. And
how many years was he in the NFL?
He's seeing all the top talent across the entire league. And he's coming out saying that Jeff Sims throws a deep ball with the best of them. So he's saying that Jeff Sims could go toe-to-toe with any top quarterback. He just needs to be coached better. And
with
so
the best of who?
I trust the guy.
The best of the Carolina Panthers? The best of that? I don't want the best of that.
You're focusing on the Panthers, even though clearly their management up top didn't know what they were doing. They pretty much gave McCaffrey away, which is mind-boggling. You know, if somebody offered you that in fantasy football, you take it in a heartbeat. But what I'm telling you right now is simple. He turned that Baylor program that everyone just walked all over. They were a rug. They were honestly just a rug in the Big 12. And now they're a team that people respect. And if he could do that at Baylor, a team that I thought was lost, he could do that anywhere. Trust me.
Cecil, he did it at Temple, and everybody forgets when he came into Baylor, that was after that huge scandal that cost Art Briles his job. He came in and had to build that program back up from the ground. They lost everything after that. Matt Rhule is a program builder. And let me tell you something, he's not coming into a decimated program here. He is coming in to a program that has talent, that can compete, that literally just needs to be disciplined, and they will win games. And that is what we are going to see this year. And you guys thinking that this is crazy, they've got Nebraska sitting at 6 wins is the total on the year here. That is going to hit the over so easy.
This is a team that hasn't been to a bowl game in 6 years, BC.
By choice.
And by Frost. I mean, Scott Frost is the biggest issue there,
but everybody forgets that in 2020, they turned down going to a bowl game.
Were they bowl eligible?
Obviously, if they got invited and turned it down.
Were they bowl eligible?
By turning down an invite.
No, it was the COVID year, Bisa. They still didn't hit 6 wins.
By turning down an invite, you chose not to be bowl eligible yourself.
Jason, and you're talking about a coach who got out-coached by a Georgia Southern coach. I mean, what does that tell you about your coaching? He got out-coached by Troy in his first year. We should have seen all the red flags coming.
Yeah, that's probably a true statement there, T-Sol, considering it went from Troy and ended with Georgia Southern. So, you know.
And Jason, if you recall, we were at that first game where we really saw his terrible coaching, and that was on the road at Northwestern when we had a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter. Northwestern ended up tying us. We went to overtime, and they beat us. So that shows you right there. I mean, if we would have fired the guy there, it showed you right there. That was his blueprint. That was who he was. He made horrible decisions in the game and especially at the end of the game when it's all magnified.
So I want you to know I am not out here backing Frost one bit. I'm just out here saying that Bisa's a little delusional to think that we're going to come out of here getting a new coach, getting in half a new team, and all these guys are just going to blend together like they've been playing since they were in Pee Wee.
They've been playing together for a handful of years now anyway. Now it's just got a disciplined coach at the helm.
Jason, and that's not how I'm taking it at all. It sounds to me like you're 100% back in Frost. You're saying the Huskers should have never got rid of him. We may as well call you Frosty the Cornhusker, dancing around with your little top hat, sprinkling a little sprinkles. You know what? Throw some sprinkles in there, some Skittles, as Chazzy said. You're doing your little dance on your end.
Well, Tisa, let me tell you something. You're just taking it the wrong way, 100%. And I think Scott Frost's downfall with Nebraska in his last year was when Trev Alberts had him fire his guys to save his job. At that point, Scott Frost knew he was on his way out. He was just hoping to keep getting that paycheck for another year. But guess what? The Huskers ended up buying out his contract regardless. At that point, Scott Frost didn't really care as much anymore because his guys were gone. And all of a sudden, he wasn't the one calling the offense. He had no say in what the team did. And I think that really went against how he looked out at the football atmosphere, as once we saw in Ireland, the onside kick against Northwestern was just the worst call in college football I've ever seen. The worst call in football I've ever seen. No other coach is making that mistake. You are up 11 points and you're going to come out and you're going to onside kick it when you have all of the momentum.
Well, look out, everybody, because here comes Frosty the Cornhusker skipping down the lane again because he's blaming that Scott Frost didn't handle the offense and the offensive coordinator. Well, why can't you just say he was a bad hire and he was an even worse coach?
Look, this offense could score at will. I mean, this offense was phenomenal under Scott Frost. Listen, he should not have been a head coach. He was not ready for a head coaching job. He should have been an offensive coordinator like he was at Oregon.
Well, I'm going to just keep disagreeing with you, Jaysal. He's a bad coach. He's a bad coordinator. Nothing about him was good because ultimately we never won more than five games or four games, whatever it was.
So are you going to discredit everything he did at UCF?
Yes.
Are you going to discredit everything he did at Oregon?
Yes.
This guy is straight up delusional. So how are you coming on here?
Hold on a second. You call me delusional. You're discrediting everything Matt Rhule did at Baylor, and you're like, he got fired from Carolina, so he
yeah. So how are you gonna have a little bit of the same atmosphere, the same little mantra here, T-Saul? If you're gonna tell me that Scott Frost, you're gonna discredit him for everything because of what he did at Nebraska, how are you not gonna discredit Matt Rhule for everything he did because of what happened at Carolina?
Because it wasn't at Nebraska. I don't care about the Carolina Panthers, Jason. It's plain as simple.
It's also a different animal. The NFL is different than the college game. However, I disagree with T-Saul. You cannot discredit what Scott Frost did. However, I will say Frosty lucked out at his first job being in Orlando. It has got to be the easiest city to recruit for. You can bring in anybody. And at UCF, your grade standards are so low. You bring in anybody who can't get in at a top-tier program because of their grades. You bring them into Central Florida. He put together anybody. A winner.
He was still anybody. Bringing in three stars. At best, three stars. And you're going to tell me he was bringing in anybody? Let me tell you something. They still took that team, and they went on to beat Auburn, who beat Alabama, the national champions of that season. Let me tell you something. They were crowned the national champions for a reason in UCF, and that is because they were the best team in college football that year.
Just out of curiosity, is Scott Frost's best win of all time as a head coach, is that really an Auburn victory with a UCF team playing an Auburn team who didn't want to be in that bowl game at all? That
and they half thought their they players got opted out.
Yeah, correct. That, so you're telling me that is out. That is and his let me tell best you something. Win.
That is
in
his
career.
Best win. This he beat a team that beat the national champion, who crowned him the national champion then because his team was the only undefeated left standing. Yes. Let me tell you something. If they would have invited them to the college football playoff, the UCF Knights would have won.
I think they would have been embarrassed worse than the Bearcat bandwagon that let me down.
My, get off your high horse there, B-Saul. Get off of it.
Yeah, B-Saul, I agree with Jaysal. Whatever best win you were trying to preach there, that was not his best win. His best win was in 2021 against Fordham, because that was just such a solid offensive unit, solid play.
Nobody's even going to take team,
That was the best three-win team of all time, and they whooped these Fordham guys to prove it.
This guy is delusional. You're delusional as well, B-Saul. This is just ridiculous and pitiful. How are
you
going to discredit?
You're
discrediting
here?
Everything he did at UCF. Let me tell you, he coached Oregon as well in the national championship game. Let me tell you something.
They
else.
Lost.
Oregon had the best offense in college football that year. The fastest, the most explosive. And guess what happened at UCF? He brought the same thing. Let me tell you something. He just didn't have the right defensive coordinator and the right recruiters at Nebraska for him to set himself up for success, but the offense was still able to score.
Poorly. You didn't finish your sentence. You needed to end it with poorly, because ultimately all I saw was the offense could only score in the last 2-minute drill of the game when we were already down by 3 touchdowns or when the other team took out their starters.
So
if we were playing Fordham.
So when he had Michigan on the ropes and Lincoln, Nebraska, an undefeated Michigan team, this is when Nebraska, you know, we're losing every game by one score or less. His quarterback and Adrian Martinez fumbles the ball, which leads to a loss in a QB sneak when they have the lead and there's 3 minutes left. You're going to put that one on Scott Frost?
Absolutely.
Give it to the running back.
This is ridiculous.
Quarterbacks don't hand the ball, don't handle the ball as often as a running back, so obviously he fumbled it.
False.
If you gave it to a running back, it's
false.
More safe.
False. That is not true. If you go look at the Huskers that season, if you go look at the Huskers any season under Scott Frost,
when we
go
won
look at
three
who had
games,
the most yards rushing.
Clearly,
go
it wasn't
who
working.
Had the most yards rushing. Who had the most yards rushing? Who blew most of those games?
Who
first
led
all,
the league in fumbles?
Teams.
Who led the league in fumbles?
Special teams. It was special teams, and it was Adrian Martinez
and
blowing the game.
Jay Sull, the special teams blunders is directly on the head coach. That is
yes,
a third
that is
of the
why
game.
I'm saying you
that is a third of the
he
game,
had
and he
a
did not have a special
offense.
Team coordinator.
Scott Frost
that
had a good offense.
Scott
I'm not
fault.
Listening to you. Scott Frost had a good offense, and I don't understand how you are coming out here and you're discrediting this guy. When we just hired a guy that got fired from Carolina, and you're telling me he's going to go undefeated in his first year.
Well, Jason,
that
I also want to say
everything out of your mouth is just it's blunder. It's nobody even wants to listen to it. Keep drinking your Kool-Aid, your Roulade. Nobody cares. Let me tell you something. Scott Frost had an offense that worked.
Well, Jay, so let me ask you, because technically your
T-Sol.
Kickers are part of the offense. Where did Connor Culp fit in this fantastic offense?
Special teams.
No, because we were living in the Twilight Zone. We were living in the Twilight Zone. We get down to
the
20-yard line. Kick a field goal and miss.
Culp was kicker of the
next
year
time we're down there,
surgery.
You kick the same field goal, you miss again, and he's just flabbergasted on the sideline like, how did this happen? I don't know, coach. The guys have missed field goals and extra points all season, and we're going to keep trotting them out there, pretending like everything's okay. Just freaking go for it. It's 4th and 1 or 4th and 2.
Now I think the million-dollar question here is, let's just dive right into this here. Scott Frost didn't care about special teams. We've established this. Scott Frost, apparently it was the defensive coordinator's fault. We only had 2 or 3 of them under him, and none of them could figure out how to stop a nosebleed. So, of course, that's, wash our hands. That's not Scott Frost's fault. If his offense worked, which Jaysol says it did, we would have more than 3 wins a year.
No.
What do you mean no?
Sure why?
Yes. The name of the game is to outscore your opponent. If your defense doesn't get off the field, your offense needs to stay on the field. That is how that is going to work. And if they keep going 3 and out because you decide, hey, we're just going to throw the ball deep here.
This guy
hey,
is
audible,
delusional.
Let's just whip it out there. Let's stop running the ball when it's working. That was Scott Frost's mistake.
Football is
not
a one-sided sport. It is a team sport.
Prepare yourselves
for
Frosty the Cornhusker.
Football is a freaking team sport, and you're going to listen to me right now. Scott Frost had a good offense. He should have been an offensive coordinator, not a head coach. He was not ready for the head coaching job, and I'm going to keep saying that. Why did he get away with it at UCF? Because it's not Power 5 football, and in the Big Ten, you need to have a defense if you're going to win.
Now, as much as I love talking about good old
Frosty, you have to call him Frosty.
Now, as much as I like listening to Frosty talk about good old Scott Frost, It's one of those situations here where it's bittersweet because, again, thought he was a good guy, thought he was going to turn the program around. He didn't. Get over it. We're on to Matt Rhule. We're drinking the Roulette here. And I got a question for you, Jay Sull, and this is going to be
you
a shout-out.
You were the biggest guy
this
on Scott
is
Frost
be...
when he came in. I am not hopping on Rhule because you were big on Scott Frost when he came in. And guess what? Guess who just flipped his ship and got his little Roulette ruling? Guess what? That's you, B-Sull. I'm betting against you. Now, I am done riding with you on this. Let me tell you something. You are going to flip to my train when this boat sinks, all right? Listen. When this boat sinks, I want you preaching that we want Urban.
You're going to be off the Urban train at that point. If this boat sinks, then obviously the submarine on the left is going to succeed. And that would be Deion, okay? You're going to be preaching Deion. We're going to have to hear about Deion Sanders for the next 10 years.
I will never preach for Deion. I don't want Deion.
So anyway, Jaysol, if we can just move on the fact that your heart's broken, Urban Meyer is not coming to Nebraska. So let me get back to this question I was going to ask you, brought to you on Twitter by one of our former guests on the show, Bobby. And he wants to know, who is one player that we didn't see a lot of last year that you think would have an impact this year?
Well,
that would have been Ernest Hausman if we didn't lose him.
Well, that's not an answer because Houseman played a lot last year, so I don't know how you could say you didn't see a lot of him last year.
I'll take this. Easy answer. Get ready for it. Gabe Irvin Jr., folks. This guy is going to have a season for the decade.
T-Sol, I agree with you. I think Gabe Irvin Jr. is one of three correct answers on this one.
You're going to come out here, you're going to tell me we saw a lot of Ernest Hausman, but we didn't see a lot of Gabe Irvin?
He was injured all season.
How many games do you think Gabe played last year, J-Sol?
Besides the point, guess who we saw the year before that too? Gabe Irvin was everything you would see.
Well, B-Sol, I'm kind of curious who your other two answers are because I'm seeing Gabe, and that's really the only guy I want to say right now.
I think Gabe Irvin
transfers
Jr.
don't count.
I understand transfers don't count. I think the other guy that is going to have an impact this year is going to be Ramir Johnson. I think he is too talented, and I think Matt Rhule knows that you're going to see him on the field this year, and you're going to see him have an impact.
And
the other guy, and I know you guys
Teddy Prochaska.
No, you guys continue to give me a hard time, but he was out a lot of last year, which
let
Ernest Hausman play. It's going to be Nick Henrich.
Oh my gosh. Get him out of here.
I think those are three players that stand a great chance at having not had a lot of playing time last year that are going to show up and be able to make a huge impact.
Well, Bisa, I love it when I see it, but I doubt that I'll see it.
I think Henrich coming back paired with Luke Reimer, I think between the two of them, it's going to be a stout linebacking crew there.
Don't get surprised if he gets passed up by Snodgrass.
I would be very surprised if Garrett finally passed him.
Well, let me tell you something there, Bisa. I do not project that Nick Henrich will be that big of a player whatsoever. I think he is a terrible linebacker. He is slow, and I do not think he's going to fit in.
Quick, you forget that he led the team in tackles 2 years ago, Jason. He was out this past season with injury.
And you were just ripping that team apart 2 minutes ago, and now you're going to come out here and tell me this guy is the next coming because he was leading this team in tackles. Remember, Bisa, that was a 3-win team. Three win. I do believe that you were the one to point that out time and time again. But I do want to say that I believe a playmaker that we are going to see more of this year, one of them, is going to be Tommy Hill.
I think the hard part, J-Sol, with Tommy Hill is if he was still on the offensive side of the ball, I would agree with you. His speed is game-changer ability. However, you're only going to see him in the return game. I do not see him making an impact on that starting defense.
He is going to make a difference on the defense because guess what, Bisa? Flips happen. People get tired. You're going to see switches. He's going to be on the field at some point, and Tommy Hill is going to come up making plays. And guess what? It showed that he was a playmaker if Scott Frost's offense slash Mark Whipple's offense was willing to take this guy to the offense because they're like, oh my gosh, how is this guy not playing defense? But let me tell you something, that shows how much of a playmaker this kid has. He has straight up talent. It is God-given talent, and we are going to see it this year on the field.
Well, Jay-Saw, I also disagree with you on this one. Until I see anything from Tommy Hill that warrants that he's going to be this beast playmaker on the field, I'm not buying it. I'm not saying he's not an all-world athlete, but he doesn't have a position. They can't find a place to put him on the field where he's been successful and been able to use his athleticism. But if we want to talk about players that we think will, you know, improve mightily this season, even if they played all last year, I expect Marquez Buford Jr. to be an absolute monster this season at safety.
Yeah, T-Cell, I think Buford is going to have a great year as a starting safety again this year. However, we were looking for guys that weren't on the field a ton last year.
And I don't know that Marcus Buford Jr.'s dad is going to be taking the field. But no, I don't think we saw him much last year either.
What?
You said Marcus Buford Sr.
I did not.
Yes, you did.
Jason, I think you got to get your ears checked because I said Marquez Buford Jr.
That is
the guy is
going to
be, he's going to be a monster this season.
No, you said Marcus Buford Sr. We hadn't, I know we saw him a bunch last year, but you said senior. So no, I don't think we are going to be seeing his dad on the field.
Peaceful, I will back you up. You did say junior.
Oh, I know I did. But I saw another thing on Twitter this week, and I want to give a shout out to one of our favorite listeners out there, TP. And TP ranked his top five rivals of Nebraska, where he just felt those were his rankings. But I did notice that he had six ranked out there. TP had number one, he had Oklahoma as his top rival. He had number two as Iowa. He had number three is Colorado. Number four is Wisconsin. And then tied at five, he had Miami and Texas. And so I'm curious what you guys thought about his rival rankings.
Yeah, I think TP always has a good insight on Nebraska and especially the football program. However, outside of the number one rival being Oklahoma, TP and I have the same teams in there, different order. Oklahoma is the number one rival for Nebraska. Hands down, always will be. So many great matchups over the year, and it's really a damn shame that that series is no longer continuing. And this last two seasons of having Oklahoma playing Nebraska was a treat for every Husker and Sooner fan out there, and really anybody in college football.
Well, Bisol, I agree to disagree with you because I don't think Oklahoma's our number one rival anymore. And I know I'm going to get a lot of hate over that, but ultimately you can't stay number one if you don't play every year. If they looked at pushing Oklahoma into, you know, our, we play them every year at the beginning of the season, or even go back to the days of the old and do Black Friday against Oklahoma, because other people do that with rivals. Like Clemson plays South Carolina every year. Georgia plays Georgia Tech. They're not in the same conferences. They play on rivalry weekend. Nebraska should be doing that with Oklahoma because Oklahoma doesn't even play Texas on rivalry weekend. They pick a random ass week in the season and decide to do the Red River rivalry. They play Oklahoma State. I mean, come on, guys. That ain't a real rival. But I would put Wisconsin at number one because ultimately we haven't been a true rival to Wisconsin because we can't freaking beat the guys. But
yeah,
nothing,
so how can that be your number one rivalry?
Because nothing would feel sweeter than beating Wisconsin. And Bisol, don't argue against me. You know that Wisconsin win would feel the greatest because that means we're on the way to the right path.
Bisol, I think Wisconsin's in the top five, and that's just solely based on how similar the programs were. Wisconsin's built off of Nebraska's history as well. But let's be real here. Wisconsin is not our number one rival. The number one rival is still Oklahoma. Doesn't matter that they're not playing every year. I mean, the fact is, of our top five rivals, three of them are teams that Nebraska does not play every year anymore.
And they'll soon get replaced as soon as Nebraska picks it back up. You better believe Ohio State's going to, you better believe Ohio State's going to be on that list. You better believe Michigan will be on that list. And you better believe Michigan State will be on that list eventually. But right now, the way I rack them up, I got Wisconsin because that's the team we got to beat. That's the one. If we beat them, it'll mean more than any other game. Number two, I got Iowa. Number two, I got Iowa because F those guys. Number three, Oklahoma, because you got to respect the past. Number four is Colorado, because also F those guys. And number five is the team that shall not be named in Texas.
All right. Well, I think TESOL is a little delusional. I do not think Wisconsin is going to be in there because how is that a rivalry if you can't beat them? So I would put Oklahoma, then Iowa, then Texas, the entire reason the Huskers left the Big 12 in
because
Texas.
We couldn't beat Texas. So you're giving more respect to Texas than
that
Wisconsin?
That is not why. It is because Texas hired all of the refs. So I don't know why Texas is leaving the Big 12. That makes no sense when they have the most.
You don't think that Wisconsin hired all the Big 10 refs in that
first
couple seasons?
I will continue. Well, I think it's impossible with Wisconsin in there because you can't beat them. How are you going to continue to put them in there? I think number four would have to be Colorado. But again, now I'm continuing to put teams that we don't even play in there consistently, which is tough to do. I mean, I don't want to throw a Northwestern in there. I mean, but that is kind of a rivalry at this point. Maybe Illinois, because they got the old Wisconsin coach who we couldn't beat. So maybe you want to put Illinois in as the rivalry. So I do not know that I have a top five. Maybe I just have a top four at this point because we do not play these teams.
Well, Jason, I will tell you, we as a program in Nebraska have reached a place where there is no coming back. If you start naming teams like Illinois as your rival and Northwestern and Purdue, because
you going to go out there and name Wisconsin as a rivalry? We haven't beat them.
So what? Colorado never beat us, and you're ranking them as a rival. We never beat Texas, and you're ranking them as a rival. You may as well throw Iowa State in the list. You know what? Iowa State was a rival. We always trounced those guys, but you know what? They were a rival.
Do you know what makes a good rivalry?
The hatred and the respect. But Texas gets no respect. Colorado and Iowa, no respect.
See, I think one thing that you guys have to remember here is even though we are no longer in the Big 12 and those days are over, those rivalries still matter. It doesn't matter that you don't play them every year. I do agree that not beating a team significantly can hinder the rivalry. And that is part of the reason here that I've struggled with some of these rankings on the rivalry. Oklahoma is still number one. Let's be realistic. Iowa is number two. There's a lot of bad blood between them. Iowa's had the better of us the last couple of years. Nebraska looks at the whole Iowa football team as a joke, even though they've beaten us. It really makes for a good rivalry there. And as all good rivalry games, you need to have a trophy you're playing for. After Iowa, you do go into Texas there. And that's just realistic. That is a team.
What trophy do they play for against with Texas? I forgot.
Doesn't need to be. The amount of bad blood between those two is still there years later. Horns down, baby. Then you go in to the next three teams that really vie for four and five. And that is between Wisconsin, who we can't beat, Colorado, who we don't play significantly anymore, and Minnesota, who we play for the broken chair trophy.
Well, B-Salt, I could see Minnesota jumping on the rivalry list. I agree. But they are definitely not a top five rival because I'd still place the Miami Hurricanes above Minnesota because the games against Miami meant something. And that's why they're a rival. The games against Minnesota, it just one team's winning six games and the other's winning five. Same thing with Northwestern, except one team's winning one game and the other's winning four. But I think the one who had the most absurd takes was clearly Jason. The fact that he even thought about putting Illinois as his number five rival. Jason, you completely lost your sense in what good football is around the league.
Diesel, I think you lost a good sense of what good football is around the league. I like to be competitive in football games. I like to win football games. I don't know how you're coming out here and saying Wisconsin. That just doesn't make any sense. I mean, we haven't beaten Wisconsin. That's like Roger Federer calling you his rival.
He would if he knows what's best for him. You ever see T-Cell out on that tennis court?
You and Tiger Woods are total rivals, man. You're going out there, you know what? Swinging the club, first time of the year. Tiger's lucky he's not here today.
You ever see Tiger Woods go out there and beat me? I don't think so.
Now, I'd like to open it up to the rest of the Sully Scoop listeners here and let us know this week who you think Nebraska's top three rivals are at this current day and age.
Current day and age? Well, then I'm going to change that a little bit, but I do think Oklahoma's in there. And you know what? I'm going to stick with it. Oklahoma, Iowa, Texas. Just like
I agree with you, Jay Sol. I think those are Nebraska's top three rivals at this moment.
When's the last time we played Texas? The program doesn't even talk about playing Texas. Colorado's a better rival than Texas.
Horns down!
I'm telling you, it's Wisconsin, it's Iowa, and it's Oklahoma. Because forever, for eternity that we're in the Big Ten, we're going to play Iowa every year. We're going to play Wisconsin every year. And ultimately, Oklahoma will stay up there just because of the historic rivalry, but other guys are going to get closer, especially when Nebraska gets back to being, you know, on top. We're going to start playing teams like Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan State in games that matter, of whoever wins is going to the playoff and whoever loses is out type of thing. But yeah, Scoopers, you guys, y'all need to lock it in this week. Let us know your thoughts. And we have one more shout out to give on Twitter from Yo Dino. And Yo Dino pointed out something that I just felt was a mention worthy this week. And Yo Dino said, Matt Rhule's recruits keep rising in the rankings. And if we all recall, Scott Frost recruits kept falling. Jay-Sul, what's your take on that?
I mean, that's 100% the truth. Honestly, it might have more to say about Scott Frost himself and what the college football and 247 sports and everything else, ESPN, what they saw in him and what they saw in his Nebraska team, because no matter who committed or when they committed, they would drop or they would fall. We would never crack the top 20 for recruiting classes. But yet here is Matt Rhule's guys. We got a quarterback that probably shouldn't have been invited to the Elite 11 that he did get invited. And all of a sudden he went from a 3-star to a 4-star. I mean, that is a big jump. He was standing out like a sore thumb. I mean, he did not look like he belonged with Dylan Raiola there or any of the other guys going places bigger at this point. But even look at some of the other guys, Matt Rhule.
Now,
Jay-Sul,
that's just a horrible take.
His guys are jumping to 4 stars like you wouldn't believe.
But to sit here and say that Danny Kalen didn't belong in the Elite 11 camp is a joke. The guy was the most accurate quarterback in the field there. How can you say he didn't belong? Just because the guy doesn't have an arm that he can throw at 80 yards down the field, he's the most accurate quarterback in this class. He's a steal for Nebraska, and he's going to be a stud at the college level.
So what I just picked up from B-Cell, he would rather have Daniel Kalen than Dylan Raiola. So
I want a guy who wants to stand out from the crowd and be the guy. I don't want a guy who wants to go, you know, suit up, sit for a couple of years, get a ring without doing anything. I don't want that guy. He doesn't want to compete.
B-Cell, I would argue it's the other way around. He is going to Georgia Tech.
How are you going to argue that it would be the other way around when you said 3 weeks ago that – I don't want Dylan Raiola. He doesn't want to be the guy. He wants to be a guy.
Because going there, he is a guy. He is amongst other guys that are in his caliber. That is
so
why
he
is going to have to go there
guy.
To for the starting job.
He
can
to be the
number
one
guy.
Player in this class and not go out and be the
he
guy.
He can
not
be
somebody
the guy. He's
got to
go there and
put a team
if he came
map.
To Nebraska, guess what? He would be the guy already. Guess what? He is going to Georgia to compete because he is amongst guys that are all at his caliber.
That is just an erroneous take from Jay-Sul, considering
how is that erroneous?
He tweeted because Jay-Sul tweeted that Dylan Raiola going to Georgia was the safe pick for him to not have to stand out or do anything. And I agree
that
with
is,
that.
Those words never came out of my mouth, and that tweet
they came
never
out
left
of your thumbs,
thumbs
on Twitter.
It never left my thumbs on Twitter. I would like you to pull up the receipts because that word for word, that is not what I said. And I can tell you that right now. I didn't have to pull up my Twitter. That is not what I said.
Well, I saw J-Sol tweet something this past week, and
I probably deleted it then.
J-Sol has already claimed a Heisman winner in Iowa quarterback Cade McNamara. B-Sol, what do you think about that tweet?
I mean, that just lines up with the fact that he's saying Dylan Raiola going to Georgia will be the guy as a freshman.
If he wins the starting job, he is going in as a guy amongst guys his caliber. If he wins the job, he will be the guy at Georgia. And you know what happens if you're the guy at Georgia? You go into play in the NFL no matter what. Look at what just happened.
But just to mention the other players that gained stars. So as Jason first pointed out, Daniel Kalen went from a 3-star to a 4-star. Willis McGahee IV went from a 3-star to a 4-star. And Kewan Lacy went from a 3-star to a 4-star. But I do want to point out that 247 Sports saw some other guys drop in the rankings. Davon Hall went from a 4-star to a 3. Mario Buford went from a 4 to a 3. And Ja'Cory Barney Jr. went from a 4-star to a 3. And this is all on 247 Sports. So if you're clicking on 3 Recruiting or Rivals or some other site, you might see something else.
So is 247 where you go for your trusted information, or is J-Sol's Twitter where you go for your trusted information there, T-Sol?
Well, definitely not the guy who's tweeting that Cade McNamara is winning Heisman.
And just to follow up,
there must be a couple fake accounts out there then.
J-Sol, maybe I paraphrased your tweet here.
Oh, you sure as hell paraphrased it.
What you said about Dylan Raiola not coming to Nebraska was that some people, quoting you, some people will never get it. You can either be a legend or just another student athlete. That right there says it all. You agree that Dylan Raiola took the safe route going to Georgia because he would not have the spotlight on him. He goes there and he is not the guy. If he came to Nebraska, he had a chance to put this team back on the map right away. And you want to know who wasn't scared of that light? You want to know who has the balls and the cojones to do it? That is Mr. Danny Kalen.
I forgot he got offered from Georgia.
That is Mr. Jeff Sims, who I believe you said was a dark horse for Heisman there, J-Sol. So
you're right.
Who is it?
You're right. Jeff Sims, first of all, B-Sol, everything I tweet is 100% the truth and how I feel. And yes, he is a dark horse. Doesn't mean he's a front runner. Secondly, yes, guess what? He is coming from a school in Georgia. But you want to know something? Another school in Georgia did not offer him a spot, because if another school in Georgia did offer him a spot, Georgia is the new Alabama. Let me tell you something. People would love to go there and be the backup. Why? Because the backups are even getting drafted. So let me tell you another thing. What I tweeted about Dylan Raiola is that he is going there to be another student athlete. Why? Because they are all at that caliber. He is not coming to Nebraska to be a legend, to be the best 5-star recruit, to be the best recruit Nebraska has ever gotten. Instead, he is going to Georgia, where, again, he is just another student athlete, another one of the guys.
Well, B-Sol, I agree with you. Absolutely horrendous take by J-Sol. But I do want to point out.
On which part?
All of it. But I do want to point out that it's not as horrendous as the supposed take that B-Sol mentioned on the last episode, where Big Dog was calling that Mike Riley was actually wanted by Alabama instead of Nick Saban. That I am curious to hear more about when Big Dog comes back on to give his season prediction, because that, if anything, is mind-boggling.
And for any of you interested Sully Scoop listeners, Big Dog will be on in the next 2 weeks. We're waiting to iron out his schedule there and get his takes before the Husker season. So T-Sol, put it on the books. You are going to need to get this story straight from Big Dog.
Is that within the next 2 weeks or in 2 weeks?
Within the next 2 weeks, between the next two episodes, Big Dog is waiting to confirm which one he will be on.
I'm also curious what other coaches, big dogs, claiming that Alabama and Georgia was after, because I can promise you they weren't after Mike Riley.
Sounds like he might have been tweeting something that B-Saw was reading. And thanks for joining us for another week of the Sully Scoop. You're here with J-Saw.
B-Saw.
And T-Saw.
And don't forget to follow and like, and you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Or anywhere else you listen to podcasts, you can find the Sully Scoop.
And don't forget to follow J-Saw on Twitter for those fantastic daily updates. Go Big Red.